divine grace, Asi Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Prabhupada ki, ISKCON Swami Charisha Prabhupada ki, Rataraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Sri Sri Radha Radhanath ki, Sri Krishna Janmashtami Mahotsava ki, Sri Krishna Janmashtami Mahotsava ki, the parents of Lord Krishna ki, Go Premanandi, all glories to this, some of the devotees, all glories to this, some of the devotees, all glories to this, some of the devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Sri Prabhupada. Descriptions of the Lord are the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Therefore, who will cease hearing such glorification of the Lord except a butcher or one who is killing his own son. Now, could whoever's in charge of this child, if it's anyone, could just get hold of them, maybe sit out the back there somewhere. Taking the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, my grandfather Arjuna and others crossed the ocean of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, in which such commanders as Bhishma Dev resembled great fish that could very easily have swallowed them. By the mercy of Lord Krishna, my grandfathers crossed this ocean, which was very difficult to cross, as easily as one steps over the hoofprint of a cow. Because my mother surrendered unto Lord Krishna's lotus feet, the Lord, Sudarshan Chakra in hand, entered her womb and saved my body, the body of the last remaining descendant of the Kurus and the Pandavas, which was almost destroyed by the fiery weapon of Ashwatthama. Lord Sri Krishna, appearing within and outside of all materially embodied living beings by his own potency in the forms of eternal time, that is, as Paramatma and as Virat Rupa, gave liberation to everyone, either as cruel death or as life. Kindly enlighten me by describing his transcendental characteristics. My dear Shukadeva Goswami, you've already explained that Sankarshan, who belongs to the second quadruple, appeared as the son of Rohini named Balaram. If Balaram was not transferred from one body to another, how is it possible that he was first in the womb of Devaki and then in the womb of Rohini? Kindly explain this to me. Why did Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, leave the house of his father, Vasudeva, and transfer himself to the house of Nanda in Vrindavan? Where did the Lord, the master of the Yadu dynasty, live with his relatives in Vrindavan? Lord Krishna lived both in Vrindavan and in Mathura. What did he do there? Why did he kill Kamsa, his mother's brother? Such killing is not at all sanctioned in the Shastras. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has no material body, yet he appears as a human being. For how many years did he live with the descendants of Rishi? How many wives did he marry? And for how many years did he live in Dwarka? O great sage, who know everything about Krishna, please describe in detail all the activities of which I have inquired, and also those of which I have not. For I have full faith, and am very eager to hear of them. Suta Goswami said, O son of Bhrigu, Shomika Rishi, after Shukadeva Goswami, the most respectable devotee, the son of Vyasadeva, heard the pious questions of Maharaj Parikshit, he thanked the king with great respect. Then he began to discourse on topics concerning Krishna, which are the remedy for all sufferings in this age of Kali. Srila Shukadeva Goswami said, once, when Mother Earth was overburdened by hundreds of thousands of military phalanxes of various conceited demons, dressed like kings, she approached Lord Brahma for relief. Mother Earth assumed the form of a cow. Very much distressed, with tears in her eyes, She appeared before Lord Brahma and told him about her misfortune. Thereafter, having heard of the distress of Mother Earth, Lord Brahma with Mother Earth, Lord Shiva, and all the other demigods approached the shore of the ocean of milk. After reaching the shore of the ocean of milk, the demigods worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the master of the whole universe, the supreme god of all gods, who provides for everyone and diminishes everyone's suffering. With great attention, they worship Lord Vishnu, who lies on the ocean of milk, by reciting the Vedic mantras known as the Purusha Sukta. While in trance, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the demigods, "O demigods, hear from me the order of Shiradakshai Vishnu, the Supreme Person, and execute it attentively without delay." Lord Brahma informed the demigods, "Before we submitted our petition to the Lord, he was already aware of the distress on earth. Consequently, for as long as the Lord moves on earth to diminish its burden by his own potency in the form of time, all of you demigods should appear through plenary portions as sons and grandsons in the family of the Yadus." The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has full potency, will personally appear as the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, all the wives of the demigods should also appear in order to satisfy him. The foremost manifestation of Krishna is Sankarshan, who is known as Ananta. He is the origin of all incarnations within this material world. Previous to the appearance of Lord Krishna, this original Sankarshan will appear as Baladeva, just to please the Supreme Lord Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. The potency of the Lord, known as Vishnu Maya, who is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will also appear with Lord Krishna. This potency, acting in different capacities, captivates all the worlds, both material and spiritual. At the request of her master, she will appear with her different potencies in order to execute the work of the Lord. Shukadeva Goswami continued, after thus advising the demigods and pacifying Mother Earth, the very powerful Lord Brahma, who is the master of all other Prajapatis, and is therefore known as Prajapati Pati, returned to his own abode, Brahmaloka. Formerly, Shunasena, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, had gone to live in the city of Mathura. There he enjoyed the places known as Mathura and Shunasena. Since that time, the city of Mathura had been the capital of all the kings of the Yadu dynasty. The city and district of Mathura are very intimately connected with Krishna, for Lord Krishna lives there eternally. Some time ago, Vasudeva, who belonged to the demigod family or to the Shura dynasty, married Devaki. After the marriage, he mounted his chariot to return home with his newly married wife. Kamsa, the son of King Ugrasena, in order to please his sister Devaki on the occasion of her marriage, took charge of the reins of the horses and became the chariot driver. He was surrounded by hundreds of golden chariots. Devaki's father, King Devika, was very much affectionate to his daughter, Therefore, while she and her husband were leaving home, he gave her a dowry of 400 elephants, nicely decorated with golden garlands. He also gave 10,000 horses, 1,800 chariots, and 200 very beautiful young maidservants, fully decorated with ornaments. While Kamsa, controlling the reins of the horses, was driving the chariot along the way, an unembodied voice addressed him. "You foolish rascal, the eighth child of the woman you are carrying will kill you." Kamsa was a condemned personality in the Bhoja dynasty because he was envious and sinful. Therefore, upon hearing this omen from the sky, he caught hold of his sister's hair with his left hand and took up his sword with his right hand to sever her head from her body. Wanting to pacify Kamsa, who was so cruel and envious that he was shamelessly ready to kill his sister, the great soul, Vasudeva, who was to be the father of Krishna, spoke to him in the following words. So just one little point we can note, and we can usually note actually if we be able to read this, is that Kamsa and Devaki are referred to here on numerous occasions as brother and sister. They're actually cousin brother and sister. In fact, we read a little earlier that the mother of Devaki and Kamsa's father were brother and sister. They were actually, in the most direct sense, brother and sister. So, as the children of those respective brothers and sisters, they would be considered cousins or cousin brother, cousin sister. So now, Vasudeva is about to try to reason with Kamsa. Not an easy thing to do, because Kamsa is just a hopeless case, actually. Just totally fixed on the material platform in the worst sense of that. And just completely embodying all the lowest qualities like lust, anger, and greed, envy, cruelty, selfishness, and so on. But Vasudeva is so clever, so extremely clever, that eventually it takes a little time and a bit of going back and forth and so on. But eventually he actually manages to convince Kamsa not to kill Devaki, despite everything. Vasudeva said, "My dear brother and Lord Kamsa, you are the pride of your family, the Bhoja dynasty, and great heroes praise your qualities. How could such a qualified person as you kill a woman, your own sister, especially on the occasion of her marriage?" Now, we just pointed out, and in fact, it was just pointed out in the previous verse, how Kamsa was just a terrible person. He was not a good person at all. So Vasudeva, actually Vasudeva is a Kshatriya, but Srila Prabhupada elsewhere explains that Vasudeva is a certain type of Kshatriya. There are different types of Kshatriyas. They're not all big, powerful warriors who just fight, whose main occupation is fighting. But there are other types of Kshatriyas. And Vasudeva was another type of Kshatriya. He was a diplomat. is. He was a diplomat, not a warrior, really. So he was, you know, like a minister, actually. In fact, he was, literally, a minister in the court, an advisor in state affairs and so on and so forth, how to run the government and to run the country. That was his specialty as a kshatriya. So as a result, he was very clever and extremely expert at negotiating and debating and establishing a particular point of view against any kind of opposition. So here, he is immediately showing his extreme expertise by addressing Kamsa. If you can imagine, he just got married, meaning a few minutes ago. And here now, his wife is about to be beheaded in front of his very eyes. But he is very cool, calm, and collected, and just very astutely addressing Kamsa. Of course, he knows that Kamsa is just, like we mentioned, an absolutely terrible person. You could hardly find anyone worse. But he is addressing, Vasudeva is addressing him, that, oh my dear brother-in-law, Kamsa, you are the pride of your family and great hero. Praise your qualities. With a straight face, he is saying these things. Yes. How could such a qualified person as you do such a terrible thing? Well, it's easy, actually, to come to that, because this is normal for him. Kill women, children, anybody who happens to get in the way. No problem at all. In fact, it's just the right thing to do. Yes. So let us see how Vasudeva continues speaking so cleverly to Kamsa. Oh, great hero! One who takes birth is sure to die, for death is born with the body. One may die today or after hundreds of years, but death is sure for every living entity. When the present body turns to dust and is again reduced to five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, the proprietor of the body, the living being, automatically receives another body of material elements according to the spread of activities. When the next body is obtained, he gives up the present body. Having experienced the situation by seeing or hearing about it, one contemplates and speculates about that situation, and thus one surrenders to it, not considering his present body. Similarly, by mental adjustments, one dreams at night of living under different circumstances, in different bodies, and forgets his actual position. Under the same process, one gives up his present body and accepts another. That's very nice description. That we are already in some certain position, but somehow some other situation catches our attention and we start to get absorbed in it, even though it may be something quite different from what we're involved in now. In that way, despite being very attached to our situation that we're in now, we can then develop attachments for other situations and eventually acquire another body which may even be quite different. Because as we become absorbed in that new thing, situation, activity, whatever, then we may just forget about the current situation, at least to some degree. So like this one goes from body to body, from one situation into a different situation. at the time of death, according to the thinking, feeling, and willing of the mind, which is involved in creative activities, one receives a particular body. In other words, the body develops according to the activity. If it wasn't for our mind becoming deviated, becoming interested in this, then that, and so many things, if it wasn't for this flickering tendency to just go this way and that, if rather the mind was more fixed and would just stay where it belongs, then why would we take other bodies? We wouldn't. We would just remain in our original position. But unfortunately, it's too late. We already changed position. Now we have to learn how to get back. When the luminaries in the sky, such as the moon, the sun, and the stars, are reflected in liquids like oil or water, they appear to be of different shapes, sometimes round, sometimes long, and so on, because of the movements of the wind. In other words, the wind agitates these different bodies of different liquids, and then the reflection of the sun or the moon or the stars, the reflections become distorted in terms of that movement of the water because of the action of the wind, or the movement of whatever it is, oil or water. Similarly, when the living entity, the soul, is absorbed in materialistic thoughts, he accepts various manifestations as his own identity because of ignorance. In other words, one is bewildered by mental concoctions because of agitation from the material modes of nature. Therefore, since envious, impious activities cause a body in which one suffers in the next life, why should one act impiously? Considering one's own welfare, one should not envy anyone. For an envious person must always fear harm from his enemies, either in this life or in the next. Just see how he is reasoning. Don't do something impious like kill your sister, because it will be bad for you. He is appealing to Kamsa's own selfishness, self-centeredness. Be smart. Do things which will create a good future for you. And in the end, Kamsa will agree, actually. As your younger sister, this poor girl, Devaki, is like your own daughter and deserves to be affectionately maintained. You are merciful. I'm sure he needs to say that. Sorry. And therefore, you should not kill her. Indeed, she deserves your affection. Shukadeva Goswami continued, "Oh, best of the Kuru dynasty, Kamsa was fiercely cruel and was actually a follower of the Rakshasas. Therefore, he could be neither pacified nor terrified by the good instructions given by Vasudeva. He did not care about the results of sinful activities, either in this life or in the next." When Vasudeva saw that Kamsa was determined to kill his sister Devaki, he thought to himself very deeply. Considering the imminent danger of death, he thought of another plan to stop Kamsa. So note, he didn't break down crying. He didn't panic. He didn't try to attack Kamsa. You know, becoming emotional about it obviously would not help. Trying to attack Kamsa, although a noble sentiment, would not have helped, because Kamsa was probably literally many times more powerful than him, and would have just perhaps torn him into a few pieces. Yes, and then killed David. So, being very astute, he didn't do things which would not be productive, even though it was an intensely difficult situation for him. We can just imagine on his wedding day being faced with such extraordinary brutality. So now he's thought of another man. As long as he has intelligence and bodily strength, an intelligent person must try to avoid death. This is the duty of every embodied person. That's interesting. That actually it's our duty to avoid death if we can. Yes. But if death cannot be avoided in spite of one's endeavors, a person facing death commits no offense. But if he doesn't try to protect himself if he can, then it is a type of offense or sinful activity which will produce bad karma. That you didn't try to protect your body, which of course is not your body, but is actually the body which is on loan to you, which actually belongs to Krishna. So you just allowed it to get destroyed when you could have protected it. So that is considered sinful activity, irresponsible activity, to not at least try to save the body if there is some opportunity. Vasudeva considered, by delivering all my sons to Kamsa, who is death personified, I shall save the life of Devaki. Perhaps Kamsa will die before my sons take birth, or since he's already destined to die at the hands of my son, one of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons, so that Kamsa will give up this immediate threat. And if in due course of time Kamsa dies, I shall have nothing to fear. When a fire, for some unseen reason, leaps over one piece of wood and sets fire to the next, the reason is destiny. Similarly, when a living being accepts one kind of body and leaves aside another, there is no other reason than unseen destiny. So then Vasudeva appealed to Kamsa. Vasudeva's mind was full of anxiety because his wife was facing danger. But in order to please the cruel, shameless, and sinful Kamsa, he externally smiled and spoke to him as follows. Vasudeva said, "Oh, best of the sober, you have nothing to fear from your sister Devaki because of what you've heard from the unseen owner. The cause of death will be her sons. Therefore, I promise that when she gives birth to the sons from whom your fear has arisen, I shall deliver them all unto your hands." Srila Shukadeva Goswami continued, Kamsa agreed to the logical arguments of Vasudeva, and having full faith in Vasudeva's words, he refrained from killing his sister. Vasudeva, being pleased with Kamsa, pacified him further and entered his own house. Each year thereafter, in due course of time, Devaki, the mother of God, and all the demigods, gave birth to a child. Thus, she bore 8 sons, one after another, and a daughter named Subhadra. So Subhadra is the daughter of Devaki. So this statement is reflecting the situation after Krishna appeared, because Krishna was the eighth child, here we're hearing about nine children, as if they're already born, but they're not already born. But this is just informing us of what will happen in the long run. Vasudeva was very much disturbed by fear of becoming a liar, by breaking his promise. Many of us are afraid of losing our face, so we would rather tell a lie, if it will perform that essential, valuable function of saving our good name and good reputation. Thus, with great pain, he delivered his firstborn son, named Kirtiman, into the hands of Kamsa. This is a very nice verse. Kim Dusaram Nusadanam Vidusham Kim Apekshitam Kim Akaryam Kadaryanam Dustyajam Kim Dritatmanam. What is painful for saintly persons who strictly adhere to the truth? How could there not be independence for pure devotees who know the Supreme Lord as the substance? What deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character? And what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who have fully surrendered at his lotus feet? My dear King Parikshit, when Kamsa saw that Vasudeva, being situated in truthfulness, was completely equipoised in giving him the child, he was very happy. Therefore, with a smiling face, he spoke as follows. Oh, Vasudeva, you may take back your child and go home. I have no fear of your first child. It is the eighth child of you and Devaki I'm concerned with, because that is the child by whom I am destined to be killed. Vasudeva agreed and took his child back home. But because Kamsa had no character and no self-control, Vasudeva knew that he could not rely on Kamsa's word. The inhabitants of Vrindavan, headed by Nanda Maharaj, and including his associate cowherd men and their wives, were none other than denizens of the heavenly planets, O Maharaj Parikshit, best of the descendants of Bharat. And so too were the descendants of the Rishi dynasty, headed by Vasudeva and Devaki, and the other women of the dynasty of Yadu. The friends, relatives, and well-wishers of both Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva, and even those who externally appeared to be followers of Kamsa, were all demigods. Once, the great saint Narada approached Kamsa and informed him of how the demoniac persons, who were a great burden on the earth, were going to be killed. Thus Kamsa was placed into great fear and doubt. After the departure of the great saint Narada, Kamsa thought that all the members of the Yadu dynasty were demigods. He was right. And that any of the children born from the womb of Devaki might be Vishnu. Fearing his death, Kamsa arrested Vasudeva and Devaki and chained them with iron shackles. Suspecting each of the children to be Vishnu, Kamsa killed them one after another because of the prophecy that Vishnu would kill them. Yes, so you might wonder, why did Narada really do that? He just agitated the mind of Kamsa. And Of course, being very intelligent, Narayana, he must have known that a person like Kamsa, if he hears something like this, it's practically unavoidable that he's then going to start doing something ruthless against all these people, which he did. So we might think, what's wrong with Narada? Has Narada fallen into Maya? But no. He is trying to accelerate the pastimes of the world. Just like we now have to accelerate our reading. Not that we're like Narada, really, but we do have to, otherwise we won't get to the point of Krishna appearing in time. Oh gosh. This is just the way of the appearance. Now here it is. Okay. So now, we know what happened next, right? You know the story, don't you? To tell you all the details. Anyway, we just heard how Kamsa arrested Vasudeva Devaki and then one by one killed their children, up to and including number six. Then the seventh one, he was not like the modern-day abortionists who kill the child and didn't live. He waited for them to be born. I don't know if that makes it better or worse, really. I don't know, but it's probably the same. All our modern-day little cousins. But anyway, as soon as they were born, he just grabbed them and that was it. So, what happened was that the seventh child, well, the first six, that's a little bit of a long story, but they were connected with him in a previous life. And it's a whole story to do with Hiranyakashipu and various others, certain curses, and they ended up being born as the children of Kamsa. I mean, they have been the children of Kamsa in the previous life, as Kalamani. But then they were born and he then killed them. Anyway, that's a long story. But the seventh child was Lord Balaram. And before he was born, he was transferred to the womb of Rohini, who was another one of Vasudev's wives. Shri Krishna Janmashtami Mahotsava Ke Shri Shri Radha Radha.